This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of PlantYourself.com and WellStartHealth.com. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live an inspiring and impactful life. So today's guest is Gwen Whitaker. Gwen is the CEO and founder of Green Fair Cafe in Herndon, Virginia, which, as far as she and I know, is the only 100% whole food plant-based organic restaurant that either of us has ever heard of. And so if you know of one, just email me so I can correct that error. So from a career as an engineer and an entrepreneur in the intelligence community, Gwen pivoted to nutrition and health after the untimely and tragic death of her 50-year young fiancé in 2010. And she assumed that there was a relationship between his death and the South Carolina diet that he consumed, a lot of meat, a lot of fried foods. And she went on a quest to discover how to be healthy, what humans should eat. And she discovered forks over knives and the China study and T. Colin Campbell and the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And with a skill set and a background as a change maker where change is hard, Gwen decided to roll up her sleeves and get involved in this community and started asking people what is needed. And she started with some financial donations to help Nelson Campbell complete Plant Pure Nation. And she is an executive producer of the Game Changers documentary that has just come out. But what I wanted to talk to her about is this little cafe that she started and runs in Herndon, Virginia, Green Fair, this 100% whole food, plant-based, organic cafe, and why she started it, why she decided to buck the current trend of, you know, Impossible Burger, Beyond, and Miyoko's to kind of make vegan, plant-based food incredibly palatable to mass market. She's gone the other direction and said, no, we are going to create what she calls the restaurant of the future that feeds people without making them chronically diseased in the process. And we talked about the restaurant, we talked about her journey, and we talked about the impact of a place like this on a community. Before we get there, a couple of really quick things. One, Josh Lajani and I are holding a health retreat in Central North Carolina, about 33 minutes drive from our local RDU airport. And that's November 14th through 17th. And we still have some spaces left, either for individuals or couples. And by couples, we mean any two people willing to share a queen size bed in a bedroom. No questions asked. And we are really looking forward to what we're thinking of as a intensively casual experience. There will be no clipboards, no agendas, no PowerPoint, just living the life with a small group of people from Thursday night through Sunday noon. If you want more information about that, you can check us out at sick2fit, and that's the number two, unfortunately, sick2fit.com/retreat. Also, WellStart Coach Training rides again starting in November. If you're interested in becoming a wicked effective health coach in the plant-based vein, then check us out at WellStartCoach.com. And finally, a quick reminder that this podcast is free for everyone and supported, paid for by those who can afford it. So if you would like to support the mission of the show, if you're a longtime listener, I'd love it. Just go to Patreon and search for Plant Yourself, and even a dollar a month makes a big difference psychologically and also in terms of other people finding it and supporting it on Patreon. And really, it takes a community to do something like this. I do, you know, the interviews and edits and all that stuff. But really, I couldn't do it without the funding that I have been getting from the community. And I'd love the community to step up even more so that I'm not subsidizing so much of it myself. All right, let's get to today's show without further ado. Gwen Whitaker, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Hey, Howard, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk to you. I think we met, I think, 2013 or 2014 at the NAVS, right? North American Vegetarian Society?
Yeah, maybe even before that. I think I sort of met you or at least heard you at the 2013 Holistic Holiday at Sea Cruise. That was where I saw you and Colin first talk about the plant-based diet. And that was really my first in-depth immersion about this lifestyle.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that was your introduction, sort of.
It was. I had watched Forks Over Knives, and then maybe a couple days later, I saw the Holistic Holiday at Sea Cruise light up, and that was very, very exciting. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I've been
Okay.
on the cruise for five years now, and I'm planning to go again this year.
Oh, nice. I'll go back as soon as they invite me. So if Sandy's listening, I don't mind. I'll take a bullet for the team and go back on the cruise and teach.
It's a hardship, I know.
Yeah. Haha, it's a pun, right? Hardship. So
you're quick.
So so before we lose all our listeners, you're doing a lot of really cool, powerful, innovative stuff in the plant-based/health world. But let's go back to like your background, because you have a background in like consulting and security, like weird stuff, right? Like has nothing to do.
Yeah, I like to say I'm a change enabler in places where it's hard to make change. So my background is in engineering. I'm an electrical engineer, and I spent 35 years in the intelligence community helping to take new technologies into that space. So high-performance computing, big data, data analytics. I ran a company in the intelligence community for 10 years that helped put we put the first cloud computer at CIA. And then I got into electric vehicles. So my company actually does all the catering locally for Tesla, and then plant-based nutrition. I sort of see as a competitive asset. So when companies adopt plant-based nutrition throughout the company, it provides a competitive edge for people. So the sooner you get in it, the better off you're going to be.
Oh, that's good. That's fascinating. I'm already like writing down taglines to steal for for WellStart. Plant-based nutrition as a competitive asset. Let's talk a little bit about like this. You have like this fascinating career. Like, did you start a company that helped intelligence community, you know, communicate better and secure their data?
So I had been in that space with companies like Hewlett Packard, Cray Research, the supercomputer company, Silicon Graphics, and I ran Teradata's Intel practice. And when the internet started becoming a thing in the 2000s, I left to join a VC-funded startup, and it ended up putting me up in New York City on 9/11. So I was two blocks from the Trade Towers when the plane flew into the building. And at the time, I decided to get back into the intelligence community and focus on helping to bring disparate data sources together. So I started a company about 2 weeks after 9/11, and I sold my company 6 months after Osama bin Laden was taken out.
Bookends, huh?
We actually put some of the technology in place that helped with targeting in the counterterrorism center. So it was a very interesting time, and I had a great team of people, and we were bought by another company, and that gave me sort of the freedom to pursue things that were of interest to me.
I don't want to go down the rabbit hole completely, but I am curious, like when you saw the like 9/11, like one of the narratives of it was all these intelligence agencies had all the pieces and they didn't communicate, so they didn't put the puzzle together to prevent it. Is that kind of what was going through your mind?
Yeah, the data was there, but it was in disparate data sources. I think people were more concerned at that point in time with protecting data rather than sharing data. So a lot of the directives that came out after that time sort of enabled the push to be more proactive in sharing data between agencies. So we helped to do the implementation of that with a lot of the new technologies that were coming out.
Gotcha. I was just listening to a thing on NPR with Cal Newport, who just wrote this book on digital minimalism. And it was, I think he put an article in the New Yorker about email and how bad it is. And he used as an example the CIA building that had this early form of email, with which was like basically the stuff that you take to put your check in the bank from the drive-through lane, like these pneumatic right. tubes.
Right.
Did you see that stuff there?
Well, it's changed a lot since then. It's definitely. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Enemy of the State. When that came out, that sort of predicted more how things are now, where you actually see different types of intelligence being combined to give analysts a better perspective of what's happening. So it's much more state of the art now.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah. And I guess what happened to me was maybe 2 years before I sold my company, I lost a partner to heart disease. I was engaged to this fellow named Tony. He was a Navy captain, and I had met him at IBM. He had left the Navy and gone to work for IBM. And so I was consulting, and he was working there. And we were together 7 years. And one night when I was driving home, we were talking on the phone, and he was basically talking about what to get for dinner. And he said, "I feel dizzy," and dropped off the line. And so I called 911. And by the time I got home, my cul-de-sac was filled with paramedics and fire engines, and he was not able to be revived. And so,
and gosh, what year was this?
This was actually in 2009, so it was 10 years ago this October.
Gosh.
And at the time, I thought that it was genetic. His mother had died of heart disease, and his dad died of heart disease, and so it was pretty common for South Carolina natives to have that. And when I would go to visit him, I always took my own food, and so I was on sort of a different path than he was. But it struck me, he was only 50 years old and had 3 kids. So it was a very traumatic event. And basically, at the time, I just thought it was genetic. And then fast forward 2 years later, my boyfriend now introduced me to Forks Over Knives. And I watched that, and it really resonated with me. Essel Steen talking about diet being a path to avoiding heart disease or reversing heart disease really opened my eyes to something. I always thought I was on a healthy diet. But with the sort of the Western mentality of you need animal protein and you need dairy for calcium. And so the movie dispelled those things. And then after the holistic holiday at Sea Cruise, that intense immersion, I never went back. So I took the few remaining things. I stopped seafood and stopped dairy and eggs, and I started feeling better.
Yeah. So you mentioned like you were already eating what you thought was better. I guess like, you know, clean, like salmon and more salad and stuff. But then like, did you have any health problems of your own? So you started feeling better. Was it just sort of, you thought you were fine and you didn't realize how much better you could feel, or were there like things?
Yeah, that's always a thing. I think, you know, you sort of accept growing older with getting sort of different things start to come into play, you know, slowing down or not being able to do the same things you did when you were younger. And what I found was a lot of those things really reversed. You know, my skin, I'm 61, my skin got better than probably when I was 40. I lost and kept off like almost 15 pounds. I had bursitis on one of my shoulders, basically went away. So I was able to work out without any pain, and I could go do a boot camp for an hour and then not feel any pain for the next 2 days. So that was, and sleep was probably one of the big things. I always thought that sleep was because of a stressful job. But if you ever decide to open a restaurant, you'll notice that there's a lot of stress with that too. But it just really affected me in a different way. I didn't feel the same. It was almost like that anxiety just flew away. And so the absence of it was amazing. and sleep, being able to lay down and actually fall right to sleep, was something that I just never experienced before. So
So it's like
that's
all the things that went away were sort of like normal parts of being in your 50s, right? The skin goes,
absolutely.
you got aches and pains, it's hard to sleep, you're under stress. Like when you looked around, I'm guessing that almost everyone, all your contemporaries were suffering pretty much the same decline.
It's sort of interesting now. I mean, the four things that I usually talk with people about are: everybody wants to lose weight, blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes. Those are like the top four reasons, I think, that people engage with us now. And my weight had crept up over time, so that was probably the biggest thing for me. I didn't have blood pressure or cholesterol issues. But the other things are more inconveniences, and they're not like reasons necessarily to see a doctor. So for me, just kind of shedding those things was, it gave me a glimpse into a hopeful future.
Were you on any meds?
I would take Ambien to go to sleep, and I'd had periods after 9/11 and after Tony's death where I took anxiety medication, and the feelings that I had associated with that drove that need for medication really just went away.
And that's without like therapy or. That's just the physical changes, the diet.
I mean, if you think about it, you're taking a pill to stop a symptom, and food is medicine, just in a different package. And so what we talk about now is it's more not what you eat, it's what you don't eat. And when you take the things out that cause, one of the things I think about now is anxiety. If you think about the hormones of the fish that I had been eating were trapped in nets over days of time, so they had the fear hormones, the all of the sort of the things that you th would think about if you knew you were going to die, are present and secreted in fish, and then you're eating those fish. And so if you're thinking of taking a hormone pill, that's basically what you're getting when you eat fish, is all of those, the anxiety, the fish being trapped in a net. So taking that out of my diet, I think, was really what freed me from that.
I've never thought of it that way. That's like. There's anti-anxiety meds, and then there's pro-anxiety
Right,
meds.
absolutely.
Ah, here, have some fish hormones. They were terrified for a week, and then killed at the height of their terror.
Absolutely. So
Wow.
that's what you're ingesting. It's really, you either get it in a laboratory to prevent it, or you can take out what's causing it. So Tony, my fiance, was a Navy captain, and the Navy never had the same budget as people in the Air Force. And so when he would have something go wrong in his car, he used to put a piece of black tape over the indicator light on his dashboard. Like, the passenger seat airbag went off, so he put a piece of black tape over it. And he couldn't see it, but I could see it flashing. And so I think that's what people do today when they go to their doctors, is their indicator light is going on. Their body is giving them indicators that something's not right. And they go to the doctor, and the doctor's giving them a pill or black tape to put over their body's indication that something's going wrong. And so I think, from an engineering perspective, I like to talk with people about root cause, that if you're actually focused on removing the thing that's causing the problem, that it's going to recast the whole system, as opposed to just the symptom or the indicator that was causing the problem.
So you continued. I can't remember exactly the year that Bin Laden was killed. So 2014, 20.
Yeah, that was, I think it was in 2008 was when I started. 2008, it was in that time frame.
Okay. So what year did you leave your the company and start and how did you make the transition to like entrepreneurship and making things happen in the health and plant-based space?
I started thinking about it for a year, and for about a year, and went to visit a couple of the clinics. I visited McDougall's Wellness Clinic, and I went out to True North. So I sort of did a deep dive probably in 2001, 2002. And that was a time frame where I started.
Wait, not 2001.
I'm sorry. 2011.
Okay.
2012. Sorry.
Okay.
Missing a decade there.
Yeah, the journalist in me got alarmed.
Yeah. So in that time frame, that was sort of when I was looking to sell my company, but hadn't completely gotten there yet. So I started on the path, and I ended up, I think it was 2012, reaching out to Colin Campbell, and he was up at Summerfest. Actually, I reached out to you and said, I'm interested in making a difference in this space, and I'd love to talk with Colin about how to help him with what he's doing. And you introduced me to Colin, and then I flew up to Summerfest with him one year and met with him. And I said, how can I help with this movement? And his son, Nelson, was working on his film, Plant Pure Nation, then. So I made a donation to help the film get finished. And at the same time, I asked if they would do one of the, they were doing these jumpstart diets down in North Carolina called the Kick Jumpstart. It was a 10-day thing that was, they sort of talked about in the film. And so we did one of those in Reston, which is where I live. And I talked 45 people into changing their diet for just 10 days. And Nelson brought the food up, and Colin Campbell brought the forks over knives. And I had a nurse that did blood testing for before and after. And it was almost like a miracle. We'd see 20 to 30% blood drop, cholesterol drop in blood cholesterol. And one friend with rheumatoid arthritis, it basically went away. So she had went from 4 meds to 3 meds in 10 days. And so it was very dramatic project. And I started people started saying this 10-day thing changed my life. And so I started thinking, how can I do this to scale and remove the obstacles for people being successful, which is people don't know how to shop. They don't know how to cook. They have a lot of questions around going from the standard American diet to plant-based. So I opened the restaurant, Green Fair, in November. I signed a lease in September and opened the restaurant in November.
What year are we?
This is in 2015.
2015.
Yeah. Okay. So
what did you know about food and food business?
Nothing.
All right. The reason I'm asking is, like, I know a lot of people who've started restaurants, and there's very few of them I could interview 4 years later who are still in the restaurant business.
Yeah. So it's sort of an act of philanthropy. It hasn't gone into the black yet, but it's one of those things where I set the bar really, really high, because I wanted to be not just any restaurant, but a restaurant of the future. So, you know, we started in 2015 doing all plant-based, organic, which took a year and a half to go through that certification. We're one of 6 organic certified restaurants these days. And we started
one of
doing
6 in the country?
In the U.S.
Wow.
And we started doing the salt oil sugar-free aspect as well, which was something else that I had learned on the cruise, was the things that the food industry uses to get people addicted to food that cause harm to people. So when you take those things out and you take out the 400 chemicals that other restaurants have in their ingredients that are part of being non-organic, and combine that with plant-based, sort of those three things really cause very dramatic health outcomes.
So the entrepreneur in me is thinking, you just took out all the things that people love to eat, they get addicted to. Like, what were the early reviews? I mean, how did you first, how do you make this taste good? Because, like, you and I, after years, like, we can look at a bowl of steamed kale or summer squash and go, oh, this is delicious. Maybe a little oregano or something, a little lemon juice. But for most people, when they try it the first time, they're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we have. So if you look on our Yelp reviews, we either have 5 stars or 1 star. And a lot of it really depends on education and sort of where people are on their journey. So because we do the Kickstart at Green Fair, we've had almost 900 people go through this 21-day program now. And that's where we teach classes and we actually give people 2 meals a day for 21 days. So they come into class and then they take home a bag of food. And the first couple of days for people that have been on a standard American diet, it's not that fun. And if you read Doug Lyle's book, he talks about, the standard American diet as the top of the sinusoidal wave. And I call the pit of despair is like the 2 to 3 days where your taste buds are being reset. And if people make it through that point, what they start to notice is their cravings start to dramatically shift. They're craving fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, and legumes that are spiced with, interesting flavors, but not soaked in salt, oil, and sugar. And so, yeah, the restaurant thing has been, they're definitely challenging things from the standpoint of being next to a Thai restaurant and watching people go into that restaurant instead of ours, and knowing it's like you're either choosing health or you're choosing what you've sort of grown expected, ex learn to expect from going out to eat. So we
Yes.
sometimes joke that we're sort of like the birthday place, there'll be a table of six and there'll be one happy kid with a big smile on their face and a lot of adults that are sort of like frowning at the menu.
It's
So,
almost like having an art house theater next to a porno.
that's a great analogy. I love that. And so it's really, people that are educated and innovative, as they learn about plant-based and they hear from Esselstyn and Forks Over Knives and Colin Campbell and Michael Greger and Neil Barnard, all of these, we tend to be the landing place for people that want to continue that. So we have been growing a set. Basically, it's a community. In the restaurant, we do things like dinner and a movie. We have speakers that come in. I have a lot of books in the restaurant, and so if people come in and they like the food, then they'll explore the books. And if I'm there, our servers will have a discussion with people about why we're doing things a certain way. Why we don't cook with salt in the kitchen, but we have salt on the table for flavor. So, it's a difference between bread and potato chips. Bread is going to have a lot more sodium than potato chips. But potato chips, you taste it on your tongue, it's just not cooked into the bread. So we encourage people to use it for flavoring instead of as an embedded ingredient to extend the shelf life.
Now I'm curious where like your the restaurant, the food gets people in, and then you'll show them the books and the movies and start explaining. So you're starting with, as Brian Terry says, this the chef from California, you start with the visceral, and then to the intellectual, and then the political. Some people, would say like that's the job of Impossible Burger and Beyond Meat and Memphis Meats to get people into like to make it seem as more as much like what they're already doing as possible. And yet you're doing outreach in a way where you're saying we're going to change things. You're going to we're going to give you a completely different experience, and it may take you a couple of days to adapt to it. What was your philosophy driving you to do whole food plant-based SOS free as opposed to an impossible burger sort of, hey, it bleeds like meat, tastes like meat, smells like meat, but it's peas.
Yeah, so what we're giving people is not the taste experience that they're used to, but we're giving them the health that they're not used to. So when we get people, we're replacing it with something better. It's like when you can get somebody that's had Crohn's disease all their life, and all of a sudden the Crohn's disease goes away, or the pain from rheumatoid arthritis goes away, or asthma. You know, in 21 days, we've seen people that have basically reversed things that they've experienced their entire life, and you allow them to breathe or to move or to do things that in their life that they haven't been able to do because of what they're eating, then those people become dedicated to this this food. So it can be one of the most, I think, dramatic experiences that people ever have. And it's an education thing that I think, if I look at the path of the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Meat, I think those are great because they're taking animals out of the food chain, but they're not promoting health. The people that are choosing those things are choosing to maintain where they are from a health perspective and not necessarily to improve their own animal experience. So, if you look at those products and the fat profile and the things with the heme iron, I think a lot of the things that are, you can, and I think Neil Barnard does a talk now about the impact of coconut oil actually being just as bad as eating beef, from human experience. You're definitely doing it from a feel good in that you're not causing harm to another creature. And you're removing a lot of the bacteria and the hormones that you get with animal products. But the fat component is going to be from a diabetes and a heart disease. It's going to be sort of on par, with those things. So I think there's a whole range of places right now that are focusing on alternatives to eating animals. And so I'm sort of supportive of all of those, whether it's fast food or, my restaurant, which I hope over time what's going to happen is some of the successful chains are going to not only, like Silver Diner, for example, has a whole page of vegan options right now. And my hope is that as our customers go out, they start asking for organic options or oil-free options, that they're, as you have people more educated about things, that they're going to start pushing restaurants that are successful chains to decline the amount of animal products that they're serving and increase the number of plant-based options that they're serving that are healthy and that are, organic. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the future trend. There's some vegan chains that are coming out. So I have a friend, Fruitive, I think they have 5 restaurants right now, and they're actually looking to franchise.
What's the name of the restaurant?
It's called Fruitive, Fruitive. Oh. And I'm friends with the owner, and he's got in this basically because his parents didn't have a place to eat. So he created a restaurant. He's doing organic and he's doing plant-based. And I think he's starting to explore the oil-free options, but he's based down in Norfolk and Virginia Beach and then DC.
Hmm. Very cool. So you mentioned starting off with the 10-day jumpstart, and I was involved with those early ones with Nelson in North Carolina, and we saw incredible changes in 10 days. The challenge is with anything like that, sustainability. So what are you doing to help people on day 11 and day 111 and day 1011?
Yeah, so we started the project that I did initially was for 10 days. And then when I opened the restaurant, I had met Neil Barnard and started working with PCRM. So now we are an educational alliance partner with PCRM, and we do the 21-day program, which is going to be better to keeping people on track. 21 to 28 days is going to be a lot better than just 10 days. And I'm actually working right now to, I started a 501c3 about 3 weeks ago. And the focus there is going to be to combine traditional medicine, yoga, massage, chiropractic, and meditation in one place. And I'm hoping I've got a proposal into a facility where we would be able to bring those different pieces together and partner with providers in those areas to do sort of what you said, which is to create sort of a holistic environment where people can get not only the education and the food, but also other things that are going to help keep them on their journey.
Can you find enough alternative practitioners who believe in the plant-based message, who aren't going to try to, you know, undermine it with, like, you know, Chinese medicine, you know, organic beef liver sorts of things that I've heard from a lot of, you know, acupuncturists? And
it's a challenge, because a lot of it's, sometimes it's our customers educating their doctors or their gym, you know, people at the gym or their nutritional coaches. So what we had one lady that went back to her doctor, and he's like, it's fine what you're doing, just add some fish. And, you know, just those subtle suggestions from doctors can sort of undermine what we've seen. And when people do that and they notice that their health gets worse or goes back to where it had been before, then it sort of validates, you know, and you can do the blood testing and the blood pressure and get the biometrics to actually show the success that this works. We've had maybe 3 dozen doctors go through the Kickstart now. And so the doctors, when they go through it, they have a better idea of, especially when they do the blood testing and they lose weight and they see that this is the path. I reached out to a Washington Post reporter a few years ago, Cortland Malloy. He writes a column. I think he's been there since 1975. So he's a local institution, writes in the Metro section. And he has written a couple articles about us. And then he actually went through the Kickstart himself in January. And I partnered with one of Bill Clinton's doctors, Dr. Rob Darling, who worked with Dean Ornish in the White House, to do a full biometrics on Cortland before he started. So he did a carotid artery test. He did an informed body fitness where they're looking at like bone fat and muscle mass. And then he went through the nutritional program. I went to meditation classes with him for 6 weeks, and we watched movies together with a group, and we started exercising. So we put a lot of these pieces together, and he was sort of my guinea pig for this holistic path. And so he was extremely successful with the program. He's lost close to 50 pounds. He's been writing articles now in the Washington Post about his plant-based journey. And I think what he's finding now is that people were more skeptical when he started, and now more and more people are encouraging and jumping on the bandwagon. You know, as he interviews people, he interviewed Eric Adams, who's the New York Borough President, and he came to Green Fair, and he interviewed Dr. Baxter Montgomery, the cardiologist from Houston. So he's sort of bought into this, and he's seen dramatic health improvements himself.
I've seen the Washington Post now has like this plant-based column.
They do in the food section.
The food section.
They have two sections. One's a food section and one's a health section, and they're sort of mutually exclusive. So Joe Yonan in the food column has been writing. He's been a vegetarian, vegan, I guess. He's got a couple of cookbooks out. And so he started people down this path of plant-based nutrition. I met him out at the CIA. So the other CIA in Napa Valley
The
about
Culinary
3 weeks
Institute of
ago,
the Culinary Institute.
Culinary Institute of America. And this was really exciting. They were offering something called the Global Plant Forward Conference for restaurants and businesses in the food industry. So Joe Yonan was out there, and they were basically acknowledging that consumers are demanding plant-based meals. And if you're going to stay in business and ahead of the curve, you need to start incorporating these things on your menu. So it was very cool to see that. A lot of the dishes they would cook would start out with a cup of olive oil, and then they would finish it with a cup of olive oil. And so, me and some other people were sort of looking at that going, well, it's better, but it's not completely there yet. So you see people sort of moving down this path of going in the right direction. It's, I think it's a journey as people get more education. And the oil-free thing was something that I didn't really understand that until a year, maybe a year. The second holistic holiday at Sea Cruise I went on, I did the oil-free option, and I've sort of been oil-free since then. And it, all of these things make a huge difference in health.
So something I'm interested in. So right now I'm reading Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, Born to Run. And one of the things, like he's writing, I'm still in the early stages where he's still writing about, his early years before he made it big. And one of the things that really struck me about is the importance of any of institutions, local institutions, to the development of the whole music scene. Like if there was a club where people could plug in, where there were amps on the walls and you could just plug in, you didn't need to have all your own equipment. That created a much more vibrant scene, a much lower bar for people, and then there were people could see each other, and it kind of fueled, a culture. And I'm wondering if you have seen how your restaurant kind of has enabled things or amplified things or changed things or allowed things in your local area, because so many of us are working virtually.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I think is that it normalizes something that started out as being a fringe behavior. So especially in people that are in their 50, 45 and up, as they make this lifestyle change and their friends don't, then they start to feel isolated, and a lot of times get shunned by their friends because they're doing something different that maybe passes judgment on what their friends are doing. So their friends become uncomfortable. And I think what we do with the classes and then the events that we hold is show that it's a growing and normal path for people to be on. And it's sort of back to the smoking analogy that I like to use. When in 1964, I was a brownie in the Girl Scouts, and I made my mother an ashtray that had my picture on the bottom of it, and that was my gift to her. And so that was normal back in the 60s and the 70s and 80s. And I think when they started, the restaurants being faced with taking smoking out of the restaurants or creating no smoking sections, and owners were saying, well, I'm going to go out of business if you take away people's ability to smoke. And so there was huge protest in that space. And today, if somebody lit up in a restaurant, everybody would be like, what's going on with that crazy person, right? So it's gone from being the norm to being fringe behavior. And so I sort of see the plant-based community as the same thing, as people get more education and they expand their circle of friends to see that it's the leading edge thing to do, and whether you're doing it for your health, for the environment, for the animals, for athletic performance. There's so many compelling reasons to come to this way of lifestyle now that it doesn't matter to me which path you take to get there, but they all converge that this is the ideal way to, if you care about climate change, if you see this tipping point where everybody went plant-based, You know, it could change things overnight on the whole climate change thing. So, somebody asked me, made the comment about the ozone layer, you know, and if you remember, that was sort of a concern, I think, in the 80s and the 90s was the hole in the ozone. And they associated it with, you know, a lot of the fluorocarbons that were being used in aerosols. And you don't hear about that anymore because basically the legislation occurred to ban the products that were creating the problem. And so over a period of 10 years, you know, the hole in the ozone basically diminished to where that's not necessarily a concern anymore. So, you know, everybody can see the dramatic weather conditions and everything. And so, you know, as people get education and more mainstream articles are publishing things like The Atlantic, which is my favorite magazine, published a beans and not beef article for the climate. They didn't talk at all about health, or they didn't talk at all about animal compassion, but it was just do this for the environment. So,
Yeah, it's funny because it's been, I don't know, like 5 or 7 or 8 years since Cowspiracy came out. And like the whole point of that movie was the climate change environmental organizations are ignoring our food choices. And it seems like in the last year, and maybe even the last 3 or 4 months, I've seen more and more, people looking at the numbers and saying, oh, it's the food.
Yeah, that's and I think that that movie had an impact on those organizations. So I know the Sierra Club has adopted a vegan, you know, vegan policy for their events, and some of these other climate organizations are starting to become more active in promoting plant-based diet. You know, Al Gore, I think, and his Leaders for Climate Change, I was able to speak at one of their events and you know, show Cowspiracy to their leaders. So as you see that movie gain more traction and other movies coming out, I'm one of the executive producers of the Game Changers film that's coming out September 16th, and I think that has the potential to be really dramatic. It's got all the Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jackie Chan, Lewis Hamilton, Venus and Serena Williams, the Tennessee Titan players, Bryant Jennings, or Bryant the boxer. So it's got all these really cool people in there that when they made a dietary change, actually had that competitive advantage in their ability to achieve great things in sports. So I'm very excited about
Oh
that.
yeah, I can't. I've seen, I think, two or three screenings, and every time I see one, they then say, "Well, we've got to make a whole bunch of changes. We can make it better." So I'm glad it's coming out. It's been a long time.
Yeah, so I think the cool thing is that it'll be released in China. So the CEO of Alibaba, which is Amazon's counterpart in China, is vegan, and Jackie Chan, I think, promoting it. So the expectation is that it's going to go out through that channel as well. And China's
Wow.
a hard to break into market. So,
Wow.
and the Chinese, you know, having that, if that's a Western film with Western stars and sort of the role models there, I think will have a huge impact on the, you know, the Chinese market.
Wow, that's cool. It's in my mind, that brings up like the complicatedness of the way we have to do politics. Like I just saw I can't remember his name, the CEO of Alibaba was in the news for kind of basically telling people that they should like work 100 hours a week, right? And not like I immediately formed like a really negative impression of the guy, like workaholic, totally clueless and no empathy for anyone else. And now you tell me he's like vegan and bringing, this movie to billions of people.
I guess I see it's sort of like the whole range of people that are involved with this movement. You know, some are going to be more fringe than others. I look at, you know, the company WeWork that has the no meat policy, and they're like a $8 billion company, something like that, and that's where the millennials are going. And there's a gosh, there's a conference in DC I just saw where I didn't. It's basically promoting plant-based lifestyle, and it's I think no one in there is over probably 60 that are the speakers for this movement, and that gives me great encouragement because it seemed like for the longest time, that it's Colin Campbell and Dr. Esselstyn and the sort of the rock stars that McDougall, that Neil Barnard and Michael Clapper, all of these senior people. It's like, okay, when is the traction going to happen that's going to light the next generation on fire? And so this conference, it was pretty cool to scan down the list of speakers, and I don't know any of them, and it's like, that's great, because I start to see it's like the next generation is stepping up, and they're starting, whether it's a vegan clothing business or vegan travel companies or all of these things that are promoting this whole lifestyle is really exciting to me. It feels like the pace of change has increased, and that what we were doing when we opened Green Fair in 2015, and now almost 4 years later, it's becoming sort of mainstream. The concept is mainstream, and so what we've developed over 3.5 years is sort of back to your earlier comment, is how to make the food great, where people don't miss having animal products in it. They don't miss oil. They don't miss sugar. They just see that it's delicious food, and they're going to have a good experience. So that's sort of where we've come. And, we've evolved to that. And it's not easy to cook without oil. It's something that doctors and chefs are not trained in nutrition. So chefs are going to go to culinary school, and their favorite weapons of choice are salt, oil, and sugar. So they start out with oil, and they add salt, and those are the things that people have been looking for. But people that have gone on this oil-free diet or without salt cooked in it start to notice that it tastes like oil instead of like the flavor of a fresh vegetable that you're expecting to get.
So you mentioned earlier that you're not quite in the black, right? So you're which brings up the question like of scale. Like you've got this incredible thing going. It's such an asset to the community, but we don't want to tell people like, here's how you make a small fortune in plant-based catering. Start with a larger one. Right? Like do you think you're getting to the point where what you're doing can inform other communities, and or is this like a unicorn because of your circumstances and other unique things about it?
Yeah, so I think for me, in any kind of business, it's an investment. Like if you look at what Amazon did for 10 years, they were in the red. So you have to think long term. And I think it's, Apple and the iPhone, people weren't walking around saying, I need an iPhone that's gonna put all of these, all of these, my GPS and my camera into one box on my phone. I just want a phone. But Apple envisioned where people wanted to go. And so we're trying to do that from the standpoint of the recipe development, the education, creating a community around that. And I'm looking for ways to partner with companies right now. I believe that our niche is sort of in two things. One, it's in delivering classes teamed with PCRM. It's getting educate. How can we scale the education on a broader scale for people that still don't know how to cook and they don't know how to shop? And so teaching those, I have an app on my that I've developed that allows you to go into the grocery store and scan a barcode, and it'll give you a thumbs up or thumbs down. And it looks for, does it have animal products? Does it have too high sodium, too much oil, and too much sugar? And so it'll give you a green thumbs up or red thumbs down. And it's sort of demoralizing when you go in the store and you get thumbs down, thumbs down, thumbs down. But every once in a while, you'll find something that's a product that we support and you could eat all the time and it wouldn't decline your health over a period of time. But most products.
Is this available for the rest of us or just you?
No, it is. If you search on Greenfare, Green, Fare, Greenfare, it's called, the app is called Skinny Shop, and the code is Eat Plants, EATPLANTS, and you can log into that, and it'll allow you to select for things like gluten, tree nuts, soy, and peanuts. So you can, if you have allergies, you can filter those things into the barcode as well.
Oh, cool. Cool. So,
So,
what else are you working on?
well, I'm trying to, so this health and wellness thing is pretty exciting. I've got these partners lined up, and I've found a place where we've got a proposal in. That would hopefully incorporate a farm and an animal sanctuary as well. So I've been working with Gene Bauer at Farm Sanctuary, and my goal is, I probably can't say too much about it right now because it's being decided by some of the local county people. But if that happens, then we could create a real community in a county park. That they could actually scale to other parks. And so it's, again, sort of back to your point of creating a community of people and the education. We started the Fairfax Veg Fest last year, and we had about 5,000 people that came to that. So we're doing that again in April 19th this coming year, and Colin Campbell, Neil Barnard, Michael Greger, Courtland Malloy, and Baxter Montgomery are committed to come. We're going to put it in a larger space. And so the focus of the Veg Fest is on health. And
That's
we are
a
going
little different for Veg
yeah,
Fests.
yeah. So,
We've got one
yeah.
coming up this weekend in Durham, North Carolina. Josh LeJean. Have you met Josh? I can't
Oh,
remember.
I love Josh. Yeah.
You met him when he came up to PCRM?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so he and I are the health talkers at the
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, for most veg fests, it's like how much vegan junk can you get? And it's probably okay to have that access once in a while, but the focus on it is really, I think if you get people that go for health, then it tends to be really sustainable, and if people are, like I said, transitioning from one standard American diet to another just without animals, and their health doesn't change, and they'll say, well, this really didn't work as it was expected, because you hear all these great things about getting health through plant-based nutrition. So I have a little bit of a fear that people are going to feel sort of shortchanged by the expectation that if they eat this, they'll lose weight or feel better. And it's not necessarily, yeah.
Well, hell hath no fury like an ex-vegan, right? Someone who ate vegan and decided that they weren't feeling well or got sick or something,
Yeah.
and then went carnivore or paleo or something, and.
Yeah. Yeah, you actually, the one comment that I'll make is the vegans tend to be the hardest on us at Greenfair. The harshest comments we get are from people that were expecting vegan donuts or is something that they've gotten at other vegan places. So we'll sort of get trashed by the vegans pretty harshly.
Oh dear. So
And
those are the
so,
1-star reviews, or
yeah, the 1-star reviews, and always say, we're really focused on health. And so you try to explain things. I love the reason I love Gene Bauer from Farm Sanctuary, I think, is because he comes at it from a perspective of love all people, love all animals, not just the non-human ones. And so, trying to help us on the path that we're choosing to, share education with people. I look at people like Colin Campbell and Dr. Esselstyn as having done this for, Collins since the 80s. So, and Esselstyn since the 80s, and being how much harder it was them and how much they lost because they stood up for what were the right things to do. And so I feel like the minor cuts that we're getting right now are it's the last protest before it becomes mainstream. And so I tend to be very, very hopeful about that.
Right. Well, but I mean, the people who are criticizing are not the ones who are doing.
Yeah, I think anybody with a phone and a fork these days can get on Yelp and trash someplace, but they're definitely their views are actually, I think, harming the broader community than helping it. And so, what we try to do is meet people where they are on their journey and help them go forward. And so, even things like from an environmental perspective, the materials that we use at Green Fair, for our containers, we use all compostable containers, and it's not the ones this that Whole Foods and I think Chipotle got in trouble for using, which had these liners that had the PFAS that got into the food. We're using they're made out of all sugar cane, so when they're entirely safe to heat and freeze in, and they actually dissolve in 90 days. So if you throw it in the woods, it's gone. It's basically like a plant product that goes away after you finished eating. So it's sort of the ultimate cool thing, but they're expensive, right? And so it's sort of the same thing as the compostable bags that we use cost 25 cents instead of less than a penny. So you can sort of see why. Right now, until things get to volume, it's going to be similar to when organic started selling, that you could buy organic blueberries that might cost like three times the cost. And so not many people are going to buy them. But over time, what happens is when the delta gets so small that everybody's going to start recognizing that this is better for the environment, better for my health. And so they make those choices. So the cost goes down on organic, just like I expect the cost will go down on these, environmentally friendly products. So we've been hopefully subsidizing the education and the change to promote these things that I know are beneficial for the environment.
And how I'm like, I have to, we have to go in just a minute, but how is this different from, let's say, I don't, I'm sure how familiar I am with like John Mackey's philosophy of, conscious capitalism. It feels like you're, his model and what he's built in Whole Foods, parts, I love Whole Foods and I hate Whole Foods. But like his story, if you listen to him like talk about the history of how Whole Foods evolved, is sort of one compromise after another to the marketplace. So it started out very pure, and then adding meats, adding wines, adding cheese, adding chips, and all the junk food that they have now. And you're also an entrepreneur, I presume, a capitalist, and yet you're not making compromises.
And occasionally, we'll have a discussion about whether to bring something that would allow us to be more mainstream, like to have a healthy menu and a vegan menu, that's going to have more choices to bridge that gap. And I've sort of elected to be sort of true to our brand. Our motto is healthy people, healthy planet. And when I first opened the restaurant, I interviewed all these other restaurant owners, and I said, "What would you do differently when you open? Then, what's your experience, and how would you do things differently?" And across the board, they all said, "Have your liquor license available on day one." And so I had vegan wine and organic wine and beer, and we had a liquor license for wine and beer. And then I went to McDougall's wellness program, and he said, "Alcohol is a known carcinogen," and he just kind of kept talking, and that stuck in my mind. And I went to cancer.org, and you see, alcohol is a class A carcinogen, and it's like that doesn't really fit with our brand. So We allow people to bring alcohol in and we charge a minor corking fee, but we don't sell it. Mm-hmm. And so that's also caused our profitability not to happen. But at the same time, I think what you're seeing now are there were two articles maybe in the past month from the Washington Post on promoting sobriety, you know, that people are starting to recognize that that's a thing. And I love your conscious capitalism thing. I very much, when I read his book years ago, I read the book and I saw there was a conference. I went to the conference and it very much embodies what I believe, that if you're not doing something to make money, but you're doing it to promote a positive thing in society, that, and you're focused on your customers, your employees, the environment, the community, the supply chain, and then watching finances so you can maintain, but you're not driven by finances as the number one goal. I think that's, and in my last business, my IT business, I didn't start a company to make money. I ended up making money because I created something that had very high value. And so over time, that value proposition became something that was known and accepted. And we had a brand that had great integrity. And so that was what allowed us to, you know, to really thrive. And so my expectation is that that's, you know, that's becoming true with Greenfair, that people know us as a safe place to eat and a place they can trust with their health.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. I still can't believe I haven't eaten there yet. We are, I am coming up to the Reducitarian conference, which I think is in Arlington.
Yeah, that's the conference that I was mentioning that has all these young people in it. That's over like September 25th, 27th.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
I might be the oldest person there. Of course, even when I'm at a conference with Neil Barnard, I feel like the oldest person there because he's like a vampire. He looks like he's 16.
I know him and Dick Clark, right? So it's a healthy lifestyle. But yeah, that's a conference that I was mentioning. It's going to be really cool. So when you're down there, where Greenfair is the last stop on the Silver Line Metro, so it's easy to get to, and we're about half a mile from the subway exit, so you can Uber over. And it's a cool place. You come in and people say their blood pressure drops when they walk in the front door, and got a lot of cool animal pictures and books, and all our servers are sort of educated about plant-based nutrition. So it's a great place.
Nice. So before I let you go, how can people find Greenfair online if they want to check it out and come visit?
Yeah, so Greenfair is greenfair.com and Greenfair Cafe on Instagram. And we have a big Facebook, Greenfair Organic Cafe. And I do a newsletter. If you go to greenfair.com, I do a newsletter every week that talks about all the events that we have coming up. Danny McGee is going to be doing a vegan cooking class this weekend, and we go out to the farmer's market every Saturday. So I'm out there talking with people about plant-based nutrition. So a lot of cool things.
Awesome. Well, I'm so happy to talk to you to kind of get the whole story, and so happy that you're out there making change in places where change has been hard.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me on your show. And I'll hopefully, have you in when you're down here in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. I'll be in touch.
All right, Howard. Thank you.
Thanks, Gwen. All right. I hope you found that awesome and inspiring. I'm excited to say that I'm actually going to be eating at Greenfair on Thursday evening. So maybe I'll remember to pull out my phone and Instagram some of that. I tend not to do that. I'm more interested in the food than remembering social media, but I'll be with Josh, so maybe he will prompt me, move me into the digital age. So if you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself podcast and you would like to support our mission, you can subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And If you've got a little bit of money, of course, you can become a supporter on Patreon. You can also go to plantyourself.com and find the Patreon button on the right sidebar and just click through there. You can also just let people know about this episode in particular or the podcast in general. Share it on social media. Take a screenshot, throw it up there, and help us spread the word, spread the message, and spread the movement. So in garden news, the kale and collards are in the ground. We are having some beautiful fall-like weather where it's not in the 90s. Things are not wilting, so I'm looking forward to green soon. And last night we had our final okra-inspired gumbo. So I think the okra is pretty much done. And now we're looking forward to the fall harvest. In running news, I did some good runs. I did a 9 mile yesterday on the Tobacco Trail, and 3 of those miles were at tempo, so on a below a 9 minute pace. So foot's healing, and I'm going to start ramping up the training. All right, thank you to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use Sabali Dawn, the Dance of Peace, as the theme music for the show. Check out willridenour.com for more of his gorgeous West African Kora music. And, of course, thanks to all of you Plant Yourself podcast patrons, as in Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Marrow, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hathaway, Mary Jane Wheeler, Alan Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Burns, Christine Nielsen, Tina Scharf, Tina Ahern, Jen Volkanovsky, David Bizek, The Mysterious Michelle X, Elspeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Andrew, Josina, Julianne Roland, Stu Donlick, Sarah Durkis, Ronda Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Peterson, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, San Francisco, Jeanette Bell, Gila, Sarah David, Donnie Ubler, Cyber, Dory, Cyber, Dorona, Visa, Gio, and Carolyn Argentati, Jody Friesner, Ruth Ann Funderburk. Misha Rosen, Michael Warbeck, the equally mysterious Tracy Z, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Linneman, Riser Cinnamon, Nick Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Burton, Nicole Ramsey, Susan Ahmad, Molly Levine, Inscrutable, Harry R., Susan Laverty, The Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Sharp, Karen Berry, Heather Morgan, Ashley Corcoran, Kelly Machia, Dean Norton, Bonnie Lynch, Plant Happy Organ, Sabina Kersel, Nigel Davies, Marion Blunt, Teresa Coppola, Shel Rutledge, Julian Watkins, Brito O'Connell, Brian Sheridan, Shannon Hirschman, Kate Rosalind, Dayachu, Lilaim, Ho Heidegard, Ida Tuzin, Wak, Connie Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Aviva Lel, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen. Sherry Orlikowski of Plant Power for Health, Karen Smith, Scott Morani, Karen and Joe Crabtree, Tanya Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Kelly Baker, Miracle Ann, Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Valerie Peltier, Peter W. Evans, Colleen Harrison, Justine Divitt, Joshua Sommermeyer, Dennis Bird, Darby Kelly, Lori Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Valerie Hummel, Deb Casilla, Emily Akinelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund Packety, Dan Picorni, Stephen Leenan, Patty DiMartino, Mike and Donna Cartz, DM Bishop, Bill Rialf, Gunter Schmidt, Marjorie Lewis, Kelly Moulton, Trisha Adams, Ian Cranon, Esther Sheldon, Nancy Sheldon, Lindsay Bayshore, Gunmarie Hagen, Tracy Gullidge, Laura Heaton, Meg for Mama Says, Rochelle Kennedy, Joan Borstein, Diane Goldman, Stacey Stokes, Ben Savage, Michael Kay, Holly Butler, and David Hughes for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends.